the most trusted and connected man in Utah.
Congressman Jason Chaffetz.
Thanks, Doug.
Doug Wright.
The United States of America is in a unique position to lead the world in this fight. We are the sole superpower out there.
The Doug Wright Show on KSL News Radio 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
I am confident that you gentlemen will review without passion the evidence that you have heard.
ABC News, I'm Michelle.
Come to a decision and restore this man to his family. In the name of God, do your duty.
Okay, now that's the Atticus Finch that I know and love. This is one of the greatest literary characters, I think, of all time. I put Atticus Finch and the skills of developing him by Harper Lee up there with even some of the all-time classics, almost Dickinsonian. And so when I heard that there was going to be a follow-up book, and that this was actually a book that had been written before To Kill a Mockingbird, suggested by a publisher that maybe she go back and develop the Scout character and tell her story a little bit, I thought, wow, how cool is this? But I don't know. I'm hearing things now, and I thought, okay, I need to bring in a friend. I need to talk this through and get more information. And Catherine Weller joins us now from Weller's Bookworks in Trolley Square. And Catherine, the last time you were here at Broadcast House, you were helping us time a debate with the Salt Lake City mayoral candidates representing the League of Women Voters. And I appreciate you joining us in your capacity as a bookseller today.
Well, I always love to come down to talk with you, Doug, either as a timer or most preferably actually to talk books with you, because I know you're a great reader and it's so fun to talk about books with good readers.
It is. It is. You know, I remember David McCullough once was telling me, it was a luncheon up in Bountiful, and I had the opportunity of chatting with him there. And he said, you know, I have this great old friend, and I just know the first question that I'm going to hear from him is, so, David, what have you been reading? and here's McCullough, right, looking at me, he says, and I better have a pretty darn good answer and be reading a pretty darn good book, or I get, you know, I learn my lesson. You know, I'm schooled right there on the spot. So I suspect a lot of people are going to be reading this book. First of all, before we get into some of the nuts and bolts and details, what has been the reception at Weller Bookworks? Have you had a lot of advance orders for this?
We have had advance orders for this, which we see sometimes, but not usually with publications, although this one has enough publicity that we expect to see advance orders. It's certainly not along the lines of, say, Harry Potter,
right,
which are, you know, some of the presale comparisons, but there is interest in it. And, of course, it thrills me to no end to see interest in books and reading. It warms a bookseller's heart.
Why, absolutely. And the real deal, a real tangible book,
mm-hmm,
dust jacket and all right there in your hands. There's something really quite holy, if not sacred, about that. Go set a watchman. Let's talk a little bit about this. And I've read various accounts, including someone who allegedly was the attorney and found it in a safe deposit box. What is your understanding? How did this book come to light?
Oh, laws, I have no understanding of how it came to life, really. There are various stories, and I am honestly not able to parse through them. I don't think I can tell what the truth is, because part of the problem is that her current attorney/agent has, her story has been evolving all along.
Yeah.
So, and there are contradictions to that story. The consistent nugget of it seems to be that the manuscript was found in a safe deposit box in a bank in Monroeville, Alabama. The circumstances surrounding that and everything after that seem to be in dispute.
Yeah.
So she says she wasn't in the room when the manuscript was found, in the room with the safe deposit box. The appraiser from Sotheby's says she was. So there's your first discrepancy right there.
Right.
And it just rolls from there, whether they knew it was going to be there, whether they didn't know it was going to be there, why the gentleman from Sotheby's was there. The whole thing is just a big can of worms.
It really is intriguing. And we all like a good mystery. What is it, John Dunning, who used to write the books?
Oh, yes, about The Bookman's Wake. And
exactly.
Yes, very much like that.
Mysteries surrounding book buying and book selling and book hoarding and everything that's almost a little reminiscent of a Tony Hillerman novel regarding the Indian reservations mm-hmm. and that part of Mexico, New Mexico, and Arizona. And so when I'm thinking this is beginning to sound like a Dunning novel right here. Is it basically believed to be true that this is a book that she wrote originally and then submitted it to a publisher, and the publisher suggested, I like this character named Scout. I would suggest at this point you go back and basically develop your storyline and so on, almost like a prequel? Have you heard that version of the tale?
Yeah. Although I wouldn't say it was suggested that it be like a prequel. Most people seem to agree with that version that, yes, she submitted the manuscript for Go Set a Watchman. Her editor, her original editor, who has now passed away and can't answer these questions, supposedly said to her, There are some nuggets in here, and what I'd like you to do, because this character, Scout, and her childhood are so charming, these vignettes, I'd like you to go back and write around this. And so Ms. Lee went back, wrote up that story, resubmitted it, and that's the book that the editor chose to go with.
To Kill a Mockingbird.
Yes.
Yeah, which, of course, Pulitzer Prize winning. I know that Harper Lee was a friend of Truman Capote,
mm-hmm.
and as much as Truman Capote, and again, I've heard various renditions of this, just loved Harper Lee, admired her, he used to just kind of fume a little bit. I mean, first time out of the gate, everything else, wham, bam, boom, and here is this American classic, undeniable.
It must have been very intimidating to be in her milieu, but also to be her. I can see why she wouldn't necessarily want to write a second book. What do you do when your first book is so well received? There's just not much of a way you can add up to expectations, measure up to expectations after that.
When you think of the great American classics, this is on the very short list.
Yes, it is. Everybody cites this as one of the great books. And as you demonstrated with the intro to our segment, one of the great movies of the 20th century.
Catherine, I believe you and I know Tony and I have talked about this in the past, Tony Weller, of course, the fact that often we are disappointed. Those of us who are bibliophiles, those of us who absolutely love a book, savor every page, you know, just turn those pages with relish. We get to the end and we're almost weeping, not so much because of the plot, but because the book is going to end.
Mm-hmm.
And then we hear that Hollywood is going to make a movie of it. And often so many liberties are taken, so many things are changed. And I get that that has to happen occasionally. But this is one of the rare, rare cases where I enjoy the movie as much as I enjoyed the book.
I think there are many people who are like you, enjoy it as much as the book. And some people who honestly would say they enjoy it more for whatever reason. Movies just can't capture the world that you build in your mind as you're reading. It's a very intimate experience between a reader and a text.
Yeah.
And a movie will never provide that intimate lens. And the best you can hope for, I think, is that a movie will capture a kernel. The kernel, the soul of what makes that book. And that's what makes a movie a successful adaptation of a book for me. And I think that the movie that was made of To Kill a Mockingbird did do that.
Yeah. Some smart producers in Hollywood will sometimes take a portion of a book, like they did with Marcia Davenport's book, Valley of Decision,
mm-hmm.
where the whole movie, again with Gregory Peck, ironically, the whole movie is just one third of the book. And I thought, wow, you know, that was smart. It was smart the way they handled that. You know, what you mentioned about developing the book and the characters in our heads, I'll never forget what my son Ian said when the Harry Potter books were coming out.
Mm.
And my son Eric was so excited that they were coming out. And I asked Ian. He seemed a little reluctant. And I said, Ian, aren't you excited? And he goes, well, I've kind of got the characters just perfect in my head. And this was just a little kid, you know, at the time saying that. And I thought, wow, out of the mouths of babes. When we come back, you've been reading this book, Catherine.
Yes.
Can we get maybe your first take? Now, you have not completed it yet.
I have not. They held on to shipments of this. We got our shipment yesterday afternoon. In fact, we got a partial shipment yesterday afternoon. So I only had last night to begin reading this.
No advance reading copies or anything?
No, no, which is very unusual in publishing these days. But they locked this book down tight.
Okay. Well, I'm very anxious to get your first blush, first take reaction to at least what you have been able to consume at this point. Let's take a break. We'll come right back. I'm very pleased that Catherine Weller could join us today from Weller Bookworks right there in Trolley Square. We're talking about Harper Lee's book called, the title again is, Catherine?
Go Set a Watchman.
There we go.
A meeting of the minds.
Doug Wright here.
I'm Jay McFarlane.
Amy Iverson.
I'm Ethan Miller.
Special coverage of the prison relocation. Listen Thursday at 1 on KSL News Radio.
If you're in the market for a new soft water system or you have an old one that is beginning to fail, not doing the job that you're wanting it to do, why don't you give Kinetico a call at 801-576-8600, not necessarily to buy one of their systems right now, but to get the consumer guide about water softeners that will help you go through that process. And regardless of where you buy your soft water system, you will buy better informed. So if you need to replace an old soft water system, if you're building a new home and you're wondering which system to buy, if you're concerned about even being taken advantage of, you kind of want to know your stuff, if you're not sure how to research water softeners and how to purchase them, I want you to call this number. It's 801-576-8600. Before you buy any system, read through this consumer awareness guide so you can make the very best decision for you and your family. So give them a call at Kinetico, 801-576-8600.
There is no need to suffer any longer from the pain and discomfort of varicose veins.
I'm a runner, I'm a young mom, and I don't want the issues with the varicose veins, and I was in constant pain with my legs.
The doctors at Intermountain Vein Center can help.
My legs feel a lot better, they look a lot better, I run better than I've ever run. My life has been changed for the better, and it's all because of Intermountain Vein Center.
The doctors at Intermountain Vein Center are recognized as the leaders in vein care. Discover the healing and freedom from pain at Intermountain Vein Center.
The staff at Intermountain Vein Center is honestly the best that I've ever met. They have been more than compassionate, more than kind. The doctors are phenomenal. I love all of them.
Call 801-379-6700. Intermountain Vein Center, 801-379-6700.
It's definitely life-changing to get the help.
Or visit online at ivein.com. Intermountain Vein Center. The healing starts when the pain stops.
I'm Tom Shane, and our Shane Company buyers and I recently returned from some of the world's largest jewelry shows. In Vicenza, Italy, our favorite artisanal jewelry designers had set aside their most prized new styles for us, including lots of chic necklaces that can be layered in creative ways and fun stackable bracelets and rings in 14-karat gold or sterling silver. In Hong Kong, we collaborated with top international designers. Together, we created many exclusive designs with natural gemstones in today's most stylish colors, allowing us to provide you with the latest trends in pendants, rings, bracelets, and earrings. See the best the world has to offer at Shane Company and ShaneCo.com.
Now you have a friend in the diamond business, Shane Company, at the corner of State Street and 7200 South. Open weekdays till 8, Saturday till 5, close Sundays. Online at ShaneCo.com.
With the three things you need to know this hour, I'm Mark Jackson. First, a worker falls into a hole near the Salt Lake City International Airport this morning. KSL News Radio will have more updates for you coming up later. Second, a homeless, bountiful woman who stabbed her boyfriend, 52-year-old Michael Dunn, won't be going to prison. Authorities say 46-year-old Shannon Ryan Sandler was a victim of abuse. And third is ABC News.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franzen. History in the making. The U.S. and world leaders reaching an accord with Iran over its nuclear program. President Obama says the deal strengthens the U.S. position going forward, but there is praise and criticism from around the world and here at home. ABC's Aaron Katursky outlines details.
The U.S. and its allies get restrictions on Iran's nuclear activities for 10 years in exchange for lifting economic sanctions. Secretary of State John Kerry told ABC News the agreement would test whether Iran has truly backed away from its pursuit of a nuclear weapon.
The mere signing of an agreement is not the implementation or living up to the agreement.
The deal comes with new provisions to inspect Iranian nuclear sites, part of what Kerry called real safeguards to make sure the U.S. can monitor Iran's compliance and reimpose sanctions if there's a violation.
Valley weather up to 92 degrees today, 70 degrees for the low. We'll have some sunshine along the way. 73 degrees right now, downtown Salt Lake City. Now back to the Doug Wright Show on KSL News Radio.
The Doug Wright Show. Top newsmakers only Doug has access to. Answering questions only Doug can ask on KSL News Radio.
I've so been looking forward to this book, and then I started hearing some of the reviews, and I love To Kill a Mockingbird, have such an admiration for Harper Lee. So when I heard about Go Set a Watchman, and initially I thought, well, hey, this will be great. I mean, even if it's not as wonderful and so on as To Kill a Mockingbird, it'll be interesting to see. It'll be an interesting study. But then I started reading some of the reviews. Catherine Weller is here with us from Weller Bookworks. And wow, you know, I'm hearing that maybe that time-honored image, every survey you ever see, like the most ideal father or whatever it is, you know, your hero in American literature, it's always Atticus Finch. What happens to Atticus and the Jem and Scout and everybody else in this book, without, of course, giving away too much?
Yeah, I can't give too much away, but there is a lot that happens in this book. And to answer your question primarily about Atticus, because that is the real bone of contention for people. It is
right.
It is what is so upsetting for people. Atticus in this book ceases to be an icon and becomes a human being.
He has feet of clay.
He does have feet of clay, as a matter of fact. He is not the ideal father anymore. He's older. We talked about curmudgeons during the break. He's a bit curmudgeonly. He has arthritis. He's in a law practice with Jem's good friend. Oh, my goodness, whose name I'm forgetting right now, who becomes a suitor to Scout.
Was it
of
Dill?
Of all people. No, no, it's not Dill. Something else happens with Dill.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yes, and Scout is now known as Jean Louise, to just throw that out there. Okay. Henry Clinton.
Henry Clinton.
He's in a practice with Henry Clinton. But he is not the man we thought he was. He is a more complicated person. He is a man who is struggling with integration. This book is set in the 1950s when the integration battles are really starting to be fought in the Deep South. And it's a difficult thing for Atticus. He expresses some opinions about the people he calls the Negroes. He refers to them, this is a quote, "The Negroes down here are still in their childhood as a people." In one of his discussions with Scout, now known as Jean Louise, about racial equality, and saying that they are not ready for racial equality, never mind the South. The African-Americans aren't ready for racial equality. So this person who was the icon of fighting for justice and fighting against a racist system in To Kill a Mockingbird is participating in the upholding of a racist system, and actively so.
Interesting, because in the previous book and in the movie, you would think that as soon as somebody had the gumption to form the NAACP in that area, he would have been a charter member.
Well, funny you should mention that, because in this book, Scout is a member of the NAACP, and she has to hide that.
Interesting.
Yes.
You know, one thing in fairness to any character, especially when you go back to the 1930s and the first book and the 1950s in this book, you know, by 21st century standards, I wonder who among those populations in those, especially small southern towns, would not by today's standards have been considered a racist, but yet at the time would have been considered perhaps maybe not progressive, but at least a little thoughtful.
Yeah, yeah. It's I think this book could end up being an important book because it enables us to speak about race in America in a much deeper way, because people are seldom one thing or another. As you just said, sometimes they have more complicated beliefs.
Yeah.
And a belief that may indicate one thing may contradict a belief about something else.
I have to admit, I'm really intrigued. Yeah, I am really intrigued. And I mentioned to you, and I mentioned to our producer, Kelsey, I like my heroes with some foibles and flaws. It makes me feel better as a human being.
Well, you'll like this then. She does actually follow him to a meeting one day when she first finds out that he's a racist. She follows him to a meeting of the town's white leaders where
really?
They are listening to one of those itinerant preachers who kind of tramp the South advocating for various social causes. Who is speaking very actively against integration and reinforcing their views that segregation is the right path for the South.
Wow. Now, I don't want him to go too far off here. You know, I think I'm trying to talk myself, because I love this character so much, and I'm intrigued now to read the book, and I'm very, very excited about it. And so far, how does it compare quality-wise to what Harper Lee produced in To Kill a Mockingbird?
To Kill a Mockingbird was a tighter book. It was a book about a very narrow period and had a narrower scope, right? It was about this moment. It was a coming-of-age novel, but it was also about a pivotal moment in a small town's life with the trial. This book is much larger. It is about Scout Jean Louise and her coming to terms with herself as an adult, coming to terms with who her father is, coming to terms with where she's from. It is her father coming to terms with who he's been and how he will be remembered and who he is right now. And it is a small town trying to find its way in a very isolated part of the country at a time when it's not quite as isolated as it used to be, and it won't be anymore.
No.
So it's bigger and messier. Now, that said, you know, there are people who have called this lumpen, and I wouldn't quite go that far. I don't think it's lumpen, but it is a bit messier. However, the prose style is still very interesting. That charming dialect, the affectionate repartee between, say, Scout and her father are still there. There is the added complicated picture, character of Atticus's sister who has come to help take care of him.
Yeah.
There's still that charming dialogue, that nice cadence that makes one smile. And these pictures of a small community that no matter where you're from, There are things that you can recognize
right.
in there,
things
and people
in
you can recognize, too.
Catherine, I so appreciate you joining us and sharing the insights that you have, at least to your reading and your point in the book right now. And again, Catherine is here from Weller Bookworks, which is right there in Trolley Square on the south side. You go in that South Bay, and it's right there. I so appreciate the time you spent with us. And, you know, we're already hearing rumblings that there might have been another manuscript in there, but we'll save that for yet another day. Now, you mentioned you got about half of your shipment. More coming on the way?
More coming on the way. So we've got books today. We'll have more tomorrow and the next day as well. And, Doug, I do have to mention to you, because you said Go Set a Watchman is a strange title for you. It's a strange title for a lot of people.
I have a hard time remembering it.
Okay, so what you need to remember is Isaiah chapter 21, verse 6, which in the KJV says, "For thus hath the Lord said unto me, Go set a watchman, let him declare what he seeth." It refers to the fall of Babylon and who will be the moral compass of Babylon. That's our watchman in the book.
That puts a whole interesting new thought into my head. Catherine, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you, Doug.
What a pleasure.